Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello!
Hello!
Sorry we're a bit late. I had to go to a funeral yesterday. A lot of people would say, oh, I'm sorry, or my condolences at that point, Annabelle, but don't feel pressured.
I already had. It would have been a bit faux, wouldn't it?
Yeah, no, but I just didn't want you to come across as cold to
heartless.
The listeners.
Oh, yeah, heaven forbid. Can we do that again? Just say it one more time, so I can practice being humane.
Yeah. Sorry a bit late. I had to go to a funeral yesterday.
Sorry to hear about that.
Thank you. It was in my hometown of Macclesfield, which is a couple of hours away from London on the train. In other words, I had to spend 4 hours on a train yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Which, as I think I've made clear on previous episodes, I tend to enjoy.
Yeah, I like a train journey.
Yeah, I like shortbread.
That's lucky.
See, it's the only place I would eat it, I think, apart from maybe in like a B&B or a cheap hotel. Occasionally you'll get a shortbread.
Yeah.
Like possibly if I was in Scotland, I'd eat a lot of shortbread, but that's a hypothetical version. It certainly never happened to me when I've been at the Edinburgh Festival. I haven't felt the... But anyway, right. I really enjoy shortbread on a train. That's a good context for it. But what I also like... is just having the opportunity to get some stuff done and not feel as if you have to reply to an email or answer a phone call or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided that I was going to avail myself of this chance to get some work done. And for me, because I'm a real businessman, that involves taking with me a laptop, mm-hmm. a laptop charger, a phone charger, a notepad, some pencils and some headphones.
Right.
That's my work kit.
Modern day office.
Yeah. Now, obviously I have to put that in something. And here was my dilemma. Is it weird to turn up to a funeral with a bag?
That reminds me a lot of once going to a job interview and I was staying at my boyfriend at the time's house the night before. And I was going straight from the job interview home. And I said, well, I can't take a bag. And he said, what, you think they're going to go, oh, sorry, we were going to give you the job, but unfortunately you turned up with a bag, so we couldn't give you the job. But I sort of feel the same kind of thing, like you've come to the funeral.
But here's what would have happened. Like the second you'd left the room, the person interviewing you would have said to the other person, "said that bag was an interesting choice to turn up with that thing, wasn't it?
It wasn't like a bin bag.
No, but you'd seem strange to them.
Oh, right. So maybe I wouldn't have got the job then.
I don't think you would.
Actually, looking back, I didn't get the job.
Well, that's why.
Yes.
Turning up with a knapsack. And that's the other thing, actually. Like, so, I mean, firstly, like, the worry is that I turn up with this bag and then I feel the need to explain why I've got a bag. Oh, I wanted to get some work done on the train. And then,
you think that sounds heartless?
Yeah,
like you should have been reflecting on the train.
Oh, yeah. So you weren't grieving on the train then?
you combined it with the work.
Yes, that sounds heartless. And then if I'd have put all my stuff in a rucksack, which I usually do, but wearing a somber suit and a long coat.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd look like a weird teenager.
Yeah.
So then just to make it match the suit, I had to take a briefcase. But then a briefcase looks A, too businesslike. And then secondly, in context of my family up north, it's like, who does he think he is with a briefcase?
I really do see your dilemma. It's this is difficult. Extremely tough. So what did you do?
Hid it in the bushes. Outside the crematorium.
The only answer.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. Mm. No, I mean, what I ended up doing was my brother was also at the funeral. So kind of made a plan to... I texted him and said, can I put my bag in the boot of your car?
Oh, perfect, perfect. There you go.
Well, it wasn't perfect because we turned up a few minutes, a few minutes apart from each other. And then he'd already parked anyway. So I still ended up turning up at a funeral with a briefcase, which I then had to go and dispose of. We should have arranged a rendezvous.
You should have done, yeah.
I've told you about when I was drinking, and I think this does go some way to show him the extent of my alcohol problem. We'd go out on these. I was working in radio. It was my early 20s. And record companies would take us out for dinner and then to see a band. And it was just a joy for me because it was free food and drink. I'd often get free T-shirts of bands. I was clothed, fed, and plied with alcohol by record companies. And we'd go out for dinner, and then it'd be time to go to the gig, so everybody would have to sort of up sticks and leave. And if there was wine left on the table, I'd get it, I'd jimmy the cork back in, and then I'd hide it outside the venue because you can't go into a venue with a bottle of wine. I'd like hide it in a bin or somewhere.
Oh, no.
Or a crack in a wall.
That's a real low point. Yeah. I might have done that at a wedding once, though, I have to admit.
Here's another thing I've noticed, having been to too many funerals recently. Everybody says, if you see a cousin or someone you've not seen for a long time, the first thing out of your mouth is, oh, it's lovely to see you. And then everybody then has to follow that up straight away with, I mean, under the circumstances.
Yeah, yeah. But that line is designed for that scenario.
Yeah. I mean, can't the under the circumstances just be implied by the fact that we're at a funeral?
Yeah, yeah. It should go with that saying, really.
Yeah. Lovely to see you. Or maybe this should be a hand gesture or a wink.
I do this face. Like that. Like, look at... That's the noise.
That's good.
That's a bit too carry on, but you know what I'm trying to get at.
I do. And then after the funeral, I was on the train station waiting to come back, and I'm wearing my black tie. And I think, I just look too much like I've been to a funeral here. But then having to take my tie off on a train station, I look like somebody in a film who's just got in from a hard day at the office.
Undo your top button.
It's very difficult. It's very difficult to do. So anyway, that's why the podcast is late today. How are you, by the way? Because last week you were self-isolating, and that has gone on longer because we're remote again, in case you can't tell. That's gone on longer because other members of your household then tested positive. So how has that all been going?
Oh, it's just great. Yeah, it's brilliant. I think the best thing to do is don't all get it at once. Really spread it out so that you're stuck indoors for much, much longer when you've got small children, because that's what we did. So Rudy got it first, and then Tom, and then me. Yeah,
have you all turned on each other yet?
Massively, yeah, massively.
Are you all still, everyone's still alive?
Just about, yeah.
There's not been any sort of ritual. You and Rudy haven't ritualistically killed Tom.
No, but it's all very feral.
And eaten him.
Yeah, not yet.
Have you watched Yellow Jackets yet?
No, but I've recorded it.
I told Annabelle about this. It's this TV show that Sarah, we just finished it. Sarah became obsessed. I liked it, but I can't unreservedly recommend it because it is so gory. I'd say it's really good, but perhaps not top tier, but it's a very original idea and it's very gory. And if those things appeal to you, you're going to think it's fantastic. It's about an American high school girls football team, football in the British sense, as in soccer, they call it over there, who fly off to take part in some tournament. The plane crashes in the middle of nowhere. There's carnage, and these teenage girls have to survive out in the middle of nowhere. And it gets very dark,
yep,
very quickly. and you see that happening, then you meet the survivors in the present day too, and you kind of see how the dark things, the dark secrets that bind them together, that happened out there in the wilds, affect them in the present, or come back to haunt them in the present day. I think that's a fair description of it. But it is like really, really horribly gory. It's got Juliette Lewis in it and Christina Ricci,
mm-hmm.
who I have such a crush on her in this show. And she sort of plays this awful character in a way. I don't know if she's meant to be. In fact, I'm pretty sure she's not meant to be likable. And I don't know if I'm just seeing Christina Ricci past the character, and even making her look and behave in such a terrible way isn't enough to dim whatever that crush is, or if there's something sick about me.
Have you always had a crush on her?
No, and I'll tell you.
There's something sick about
you. Yeah,
You've answered it.
Yeah, maybe.
So only since she's gone nasty, you're like, oh, yeah.
Nasty's not quite the word. I mean, you have to watch it. She's a very, very strange character. If anybody has watched it, I would like to... I'd like to watch a show which is just her character going on dates, which does happen in either the first or second episode, and I really enjoyed that. And that would be enough for me without any of the cannibalism or so on. And that's not a spoiler. That's something they give you straight away, the cannibalism stuff. So
So
Sarah's obsessed by it, and she gets really freaked out and scared by it, and it's all she's been thinking about. And there is in this film, in this show, like a recurring, it's almost like some kind of occult symbol carved into various surfaces like trees and things that then becomes a motif of the show. So when she was out the other night, I knew she wasn't coming back till really, really late. So I got some chalk and I chucked it onto our front doorstep.
Oh, you didn't. That's amazing. What was her reaction? So what did she do?
I heard her come in and she went, Jeff, that is not funny.
Oh, she knew.
Yeah.
She knew straight away.
Yeah. I'm worried about what it then says to any kind of people who work for Amazon or Deliveroo drivers who turn up to deliver things.
We haven't taken it off yet.
It's a lot of effort washing chalk off.
Please.
Okay, shall we hear what the Drifters have been writing in with this week?
Yes, and you asked in a recent episode about examples of occasions when Drifters have experienced embarrassment in front of maximum numbers of people.
Yes.
And Richard from Cornwall has answered.
Great.
He writes, I was in the Navy, and back in the mid-1990s, I was working in an organisation in Plymouth called Flag Officer Sea Training. Our role was to train ship's crew so that they would be prepared for war, or indeed any other task they might have to face when operational. This facility was not only for British warships, but also for those of other allied countries. My job at the time was to act as the personal staff officer to the Deputy Flag Officer Sea Training. During this period, we had a large German ship with us, and her crew were excelling at their training, with it fully expected they would receive an assessment of very good on completion, a pretty rare occurrence. Unfortunately, only a couple of days before finishing, another ship of the class suffered an explosion in a boiler that could only be fixed back in Germany. In case this was a class-wide problem and due to the potential danger to the crew, the training of the ship with us was immediately halted, and she was towed back to Germany with as few crew on board as possible. As they'd been doing so well, before they departed for home by air, our deputy flag officer, my boss, wanted to address the German crew to congratulate them on their performance, so it was arranged that they would parade on the dockside. In normal circumstances, this senior officer would have been taken from my headquarters to the jetty in a very smart staff car, but for some reason this did not arrive. So we were due at the ship imminently, and we didn't want to be late. I had to get Sandra, one of the HQ reception staff, to drive us down in a fairly basic Ford Escort. The deputy flag officer duly addressed the German crew. He then returned to the car, and I opened the rear door for him to get in. Unfortunately, before I could walk around to the other side and get in for our return to the HQ, Sandra drove off, leaving me stranded in front of 600 bemused German sailors. I tried to look as nonchalant as possible in the hope that the German crew would think this was an everyday occurrence. And I was meant to have stayed on the jetty, but their hoots of laughter indicated that I had not got away with it. 600. Who wants to be that?
Oh, that's good. Really good. That's really good.
Yeah.
And also, I think most of us in that situation would feel the compulsion to do some kind of like pantomime shrug, laughing it off face. But I'm guessing that if you're in the Navy and there are protocols and ways you hold yourself where you wouldn't be able to do that, you'd have to stay composed.
No. Style it out.
That's wonderful. That's really wonderful.
And it is, yeah. This is from Izzy. It happened a few weeks ago that I went to go and get my COVID booster jab. I booked it in for the morning and we were meeting my in-laws for breakfast afterwards. When I arrived, there was a huge queue and everything was moving very quickly and efficiently. I thought I'd best not hold the queue up, so I tried to prepare myself to be in and out as quickly as possible by removing my coat and making sure my arm was easily accessible. I started to remove my coat in the queue, but then, disaster, my zip got stuck halfway down. As I'd pulled my zip down to remove my coat, the material bunched up and I'd well and truly jammed in the zip fastener. The queue was moving fast. I could feel myself getting hot and sweaty. I tried with all my might to get unstuck before I reached the front of the queue, but it was no use. I got called into the cubicle by one of the assistants and the lovely nurse asked me a few questions, which I answered, all while discreetly trying to get out of my coat. Then the dreaded moment came when she asked me to roll up my sleeve. The sleeve of my coat was too piffy for me to roll up and have her access my arm. So I had to come clean and say, sorry, my zip is stuck and I can't get out of my coat. I felt like I'd regressed to childhood. She was very lovely about it and said, oh, don't worry, take your time. And I wanted the ground to swallow me whole. After what felt like an age, but in reality it was probably only 15 seconds, I gave up and pulled my arm back through the coat and out of the front and rolled up my sleeve. She jabbed me and I left walking back through the queues of people, one arm in, one arm out, trapped in the thick winter coat, boiling hot and flustered. I then went to meet my partner and my in-laws and had to admit in front of them what had happened. He had to stand in front of me, yanking down my zip like someone dressing a small, helpless child. Finally, he freed me from the coat and we went for breakfast, though I was unable to partake in much social interaction as my traumatic morning had gotten the better of me.
Oh, that's brilliant. I love that. Whenever I'm going for any kind of blood test or injection, and this is putting my needle phobia to one side, I meticulously plan what I'm going to wear to make.
Yes, me too.
Yeah.
I think that's a drifter thing.
I bet you're right.
I think that most people doesn't even cross their mind to have something that's like really easy to like get their arm out of.
Yeah.
They don't want to like cause any inconvenience to anybody. Yeah.
Oh, send us your story, please. It's hello@adriftpodcast.com. Annabelle.
Yes.
Let's have another way in which you are not a fully functioning adult.
So, as mentioned, we've all got COVID. Me, my son Rudy, my partner. I'm going with partner.
Lover.
My life partner, Tom. Now, the illness itself has been totally fine. And that's the important thing, that those that we love are okay. I do know this, but that has not stopped my head going insane with two things. First one is this. My son goes to a small preschool of about, I don't know, 20 to 30 children. I'm not good at counting. And 8 staff members. The pandemic started here in March 2020. That's nearly 2 years of pandemic. In all that time, there has not been a single child to bring COVID into the school until mine. I was the one, the hated one. I can't tell you how much it kills me to be that person. Because you know what I'm like? I could easily be described as someone who lives in fear of COVID.
Oh, you are, I think, there's a line in past which I think it crosses into people's underlying issues and anxieties. And you are the person who has been meticulous without crossing that line, I think.
Thank you. Okay, I'll take that.
Yeah. I think sometimes you've crossed the line, but on average over the 2 years.
Let's forget about those moments. But I think that if I told you that I'd bought a hazmat suit, I'd guess you'd be surprised but not shocked. Am I right?
Yes.
And when infection levels are high, like I am super careful, so careful. So when that all-parent email went round 2 days into the new term saying child with COVID in the school, I can't tell you how much I wanted to do a reply all with. Firstly, I'm so sorry. I hope your child doesn't get it. I hope you don't get it. But I just want to let you know that I lateral flow test my child so much that I'm worried he'll get an eroded septum and the hospital will assume he's a heavy cocaine user like Daniela Westbrook was. And luckily, this is a good thing because I tested him when he was asymptomatic and caught it really early. So he may not have been infectious. I also make him wear a mask, and he's 4 sometimes. I've never seen anyone younger than 11 in a mask. And I've been given disapproving looks from other people about it. Although the truth is, he actually quite likes wearing it because it makes him feel like a grown up. And I just feel the need to tell them all of this. But of course, I can't. And don't worry, I didn't. But I am really worrying about anyone else in the preschool getting ill. I'm feeling terrible about it. And then it's okay because it's got to day 7 and nobody in the entire preschool did get COVID. And I start to relax until that lunchtime when a teacher tested positive. And then in the following days, most of the other teachers got it. And it was all so bad, the whole preschool had to close for at least a week. And now not only am I the mum who brought COVID into the preschool for the first time in 22 months, but I've now closed down the entire place and everyone had to deal with their kids and possibly ill kids all week while trying to work. So I'm now starting to obsess about whether it was Rudy who infected that teacher or someone else. And honestly, the insanity of it, like the endless calculations. I'm like, well, the unvaccinated teacher who was self-isolating because of contact with Rudy, she's one of the only two without COVID, so maybe that proves it. And the teacher who wasn't in the day that Rudy was, she does have it. And then I'm checking average incubation days. And you know, like in a crime drama, and there's always an investigator with a wall with like maps,
photos,
bits of string linking them all. It's been like that in my own head, like trying to prove my innocence. Tom says that I come scurrying up to him at least twice a day with this wild look in my eyes and starting the sentence with, I've just worked out that, and some like insane theory about how I'm innocent. If I put this much thought and analysis into, say, a career, I'd be hugely successful by now. Anyway, wish me luck in that drop-off queue first day back when preschool opens with all the eye burn holes in my back. Although actually, I'm going to send Tom to do it because you know what? Hasn't thought about any of this once. I asked him and he just seemed confused by the suggestion. Doesn't care a bit.
What is wrong with him?
Unbelievable. What is wrong with him?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Something that I think happened the other day, but the more I think about it, the more I come to the conclusion you've got that wrong. I was on the top deck of a bus, windows open, obviously, keeping that bus ventilated, and we went past at moderate speed past a building site, and I think I heard this podcast playing on the building site.
No.
And it seems unlikely, right?
It does, but what's your evidence? Do you think you heard your voice?
I think I heard our voices.
Really? On a building site? No.
Which, I don't know why. I suppose that's every other building site I've ever been past. I've heard Kiss FM or like Absolute or Virgin or something like that, or Radio 1. I've never heard, I don't think, a building site listening to a podcast. And then,
this is the thing, yeah.
So, but the reason I thought I'd mention it is my first thought wasn't, oh my God, that's amazing. Somebody likes our podcast. My first thought was, oh God, if that is our podcast, I hope whoever said, let's put this on, isn't being bullied.
This is what blows my mind the most. If it was us, I never in my wildest dreams imagined anyone listening to this in a group. It's always on their own.
Yes.
I've never even, maybe with a partner.
But generally it's your own personal shame.
Yeah. The fact that it might have been listened to by a group and the awful thought that someone might have said, let's give this a go, and then being bullied for it. Oh, I know.
I just get in my mind, it's somebody's first day and they like this podcast, and to ingratiate themselves to the group, somebody said, oh, do you want to pick something for us to listen to? And they put this on and it's gone down horribly. And now they've been ostracized. They've lost their job.
Oh, no.
I don't know. So I keep just trying to tell myself, you misheard it. It must have been something else.
Yeah. Can't think what. Like, I haven't really got one of those typical kind of podcast radio voices.
No.
It's unlikely, but yeah.
I wonder what it says about my / our self-esteem that is just horrifying to us.
Well, I had to say I was quite excited at first and then horrified.
Right. Well,
does that suggest I'm slightly healthier than you?
It does, yeah. I got straight to horrified.
You skipped the joy.
I did. Okay, what else did I have to say about it? So I went to meet my friend Nick this morning. And he had a free day and he sent a message saying, are you around? And I said, I am. And he said, I've got a free day, basically. I can meet you anywhere. I can come over to you. I've got to be somewhere else at 1:30. He told me where he needed to be. And I felt obligated, even though I needed to be at home to do this afternoon, I felt obliged to pick somewhere sort of equidistant between the two of us.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that is the correct behaviour.
Yes.
Even though he was going on somewhere else afterwards, and my house is just as much neutral ground as the place where I picked, which took me 45 minutes to walk there.
Right.
I thought, I don't want to be that person that's summoning people for an audience with me at my house.
Yeah, I mean, who is that person that feels comfortable with getting someone to do that? I'm not that person.
Do you feel as if you know people who are?
I've met people like that, yeah.
So
I admire their confidence in many ways, though, of just not caring, of just being like, well, this is convenient for me. I don't know. Sometimes I try and be a bit more like it, but then I just feel crippled with guilt.
I used to be close with somebody who believed it was just nice for people to get to come to their neighbourhood because they lived in a nice neighbourhood.
So oh, really?
They'd always arrange social, anything social there. Because they assumed that the inconvenience of having to travel was offset by it being nice where they lived.
Okay, well, lots of nice places, but it was also convenient to them, I'm sure.
Yeah. So anyway, we agree to meet at this cafe and I get there a few minutes before he does. I order myself a cup of tea and the young woman working there says, oh, is anything else? And if they say anything else, what I hear is, oh, so you're just going to order a cup of tea. You're going to come and sit in our cafe with your cup of tea. That's all, taking up our space.
Hmm.
So I thought I'd better order something else then because I want them to like me. So I ordered an almond croissant.
Mm-hmm.
I go and sit down. They bring the tea and the croissant over. And then I realise I've put myself in like a sort of terrible situation. I should have waited. I'm now in a dilemma because I'm there with my cup of tea and some food. And it either looks like I've just made a decision unilaterally to eat without him.
Mm.
Or it looks like I've arranged to meet a friend, but we're just going to eat at separate times.
Yeah.
So then what I had to do was leave it on the table untouched until he got there.
Right.
And then it was this thing sitting there, unspoken about, raising the question of, is this for both of us?
Yeah.
Should I go and order something?
When is he going to eat it?
Yeah. So eventually he just kind of half pointed at it with his finger, which then he's worried about because it makes it look like he's pointing at my food going, want some? So I agreed to share it magnanimously. Okay. I said, oh, I got it. And I thought you could have half, which isn't true. I just wanted to eat it.
Right, right.
But I thought that was the least awkward way out of the situation.
Yes.
So then he goes over to the counter and he orders a cup of tea. And it's in the next room, but I can hear it. And they ask him where he's sitting. He says, oh, I'm just in the back room with my friend, just in case you thought he was a weird loner on his own. And the person behind the counter laughs because it's a good bit of banter.
Yeah, yeah.
And it just got me to thinking, if I'd have attempted that banter, there is no way that person would have laughed. Here's what would have happened. Silence, probably. Confusion. The person behind the counter saying, oh, I'm sorry, and then me trying to have to explain. Or I would have tried to have said it and it would have come out jumbled and I got my words mixed up.
Oh, God.
And yet, for him, he was just able to say that off the cuff, not worry about how it was landing, and he made the person who worked there laugh.
And he didn't mess it up.
How is he doing... Like, how is he doing that? That is... If I see a magician doing sleight of hand or an escapologist or anything that takes incredible skill, a concert violinist, it is as mystifying to me that he is able to go and speak to that young woman in the cafe in an easy, uncomplicated way and make her laugh but not be worried about whether he made her laugh. That is as mystifying to me as any of those things.
Life is very easy for this man. Very easy.
What is it, though? How can we get it for ourselves?
We could try and learn it, but I would always mess it up and they would always look confused and say, oh, sorry, do you mean, like, and it would just be embarrassing.
What I need is, like, a bit of banter for every situation committed to memory, but then I'd still mumble it or I'd get a word wrong.
Yes, that's the thing. This is the thing. When it's too rehearsed, it always comes out wrong anyway. It's that ability to have it just on the tip of your tongue just and then ready to go.
It's not fair.
Naturally, spontaneously.
It's not fair.
Oh, no.
All right, Quandary Corner at the GLAP Clinic here in Problematic. Annabelle?
From Anon. My sister-in-law is celebrating her 50th birthday next year and has asked all the close family to help do this with her and her family in Florida, her favourite place. Ugh, he adds. The problem is my sister-in-law and family are loaded and we are the opposite. My wife will do anything she's asked there and will happily rack up the debt for us to go. I've said there's no way we can go, but I've been instructed not to say so at the moment. I know we will end up going. And if we could afford it, I'd happily sacrifice a trip to somewhere nice to go. Not that that's an option. Anyway, how can I get out of this and keep everyone happy? My sister-in-law's maybe 49, but she acts like a child when she doesn't get her own way and it affects everyone.
Oh, this is difficult.
When people ask you to do things that are out of your price range, it's very awkward. Because you don't necessarily want to say, yeah, I can't afford that.
I mean, in a way, I find a situation like that worse if somebody else is going to pay for it or if you can afford it.
Because
I think as an excuse for not doing something, oh, things are a bit tight at the moment, I don't think we can quite stretch to that, is really reasonable and uncomplicated. I think saying we can afford that, but I only get so much time and that's not somewhere I'd choose to go is a really difficult thing to say.
That's
not how I want to spend my free time. And it's especially difficult then if somebody offers to pay for it.
So actually, you're saying the easiest option is for him, the truth, that they don't have the budget for it at the moment.
Because then
actually,
it sounds
he's got
like
the perfect reason.
It sounds like what is going to be prompted is her behaving unreasonably. And unreasonable behaviour is everybody else knows she's behaving unreasonably.
Right.
So everybody can see that isn't an appropriate way for her to react, if indeed she does react inappropriately. Because she might just go, oh, I completely understand.
What if you can afford it, but you don't want to use up your holiday time doing it?
That's hard. That's really hard, I think.
I mean, you could lie, but when you do go on holiday, you would have to cover it up. Like, you'd have to go undercover. No social media.
You could pretend that you
won. No trace.
You could pretend that you won that holiday in a radio contest.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Have you ever met anyone who won a holiday in a radio contest?
No.
I mean, I've spoken to a lot of them.
Oh.
But I don't know anyone in real life, but I know that they exist. Yeah, I don't think we've quite sorted out the problem of if somebody offers to pay for you to go somewhere that you'd rather not use up your time going to, that you dislike. I don't know what you do in that scenario, but maybe that's a situation in which you decide to be the bigger person and try and get over yourself and just try and enjoy it.
Okay.
I don't know.
But in other situations, it's perfectly fine to say you can't afford it. We've decided.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Great.
Because she'll look like the difficult person if she reacts badly to that.
Good. Okay, let's move on to the next one, which is from Charlie. A while ago, my housemate and I were doing our food shopping in the German discount store Lidl, a supermarket known for its inevitable and seemingly never-ending queues at the till. Now, usually this queuing goes past quite quickly, and for the money I save compared to shopping elsewhere, it's an experience I'm happy to partake in. On this occasion, however, we found ourselves behind a man who seemed to be either A, unaware, or B, a bit of a tosser to the queue forming behind him. My housemate and I, and the others behind us, had a basket full of shopping, whereas this man had only a handful of items in his arms, which he'd refused to place on the conveyor belt. This left us in a sticky situation. I'm still not sure if we ended up doing the right thing. My solution was, you'll no doubt be surprised to hear, passive aggression. Getting frustrated with the man, I proceeded to place a divider on the conveyor and began loading up my shopping. This, I thought, would surely make him feel uncomfortable and awkward about still holding his food and convince him to finally place it down. To my surprise, he did exactly that. The problem came, however, when he then decided to place down a divider of his own, thus creating an empty gap between our 2 amounts of shopping and making it seem to those behind us that we were the ones hogging the conveyor.
A no man's land.
Exactly. So my question to you both is, who was right in this situation? Was I right to passively, aggressively shun our fellow shopper, or should I have held my ground and not caved in to the peer pressure of the queue?
So
there's food.
Yeah.
And then there's a divider.
Yes.
And then there's nothing. And then there's another divider. And then there's his stuff. That's how I'm envisaging it.
But what could she have done otherwise? Like, taken away his divider that he put down?
There's nothing you could do. To be honest, I think the bigger question here is whose job is it to put the divider down?
Yes.
That's what it boils down to in the end. Because should he have put another divider down?
Because
I think it is your job to. If you've put some food down, you had to put the divider down, don't you?
Well, I'll tell you what I worry about doing that is that if I put the divider down, I worry that what I'm saying to the person behind me in the queue is, you look untrustworthy. You look like the type of person who would just leave your food to mingle with mine in the hope that I will then pay for it and then you'll just grab it and run off.
I don't want your food mingling with mine. Yeah, it could look like you're being a terrible snob.
I don't want them to think that I think they're some kind of fraudster trying to get me to pay for their food.
That had never occurred to me. I just assumed it was your job to put it down.
Yeah. But I think it is for that reason.
Hmm.
Whereas it does seem like there's something snooty about being the person behind in the queue putting it down.
And what about people who hold their food and don't put it down? Is that allowed?
I don't see that. That's my problem.
Oh, okay.
Why would that be my problem?
Because you're not sure when to put yours down or where to put yours down. I find it quite stressful.
Are they behind me?
They're in front, aren't they?
Oh, I see.
I think we're going to need a diagram.
Okay. Sorry, this was something I misunderstood here. So...
yeah, the man was in front of them and he was holding his stuff. Yeah.
Yes.
Hmm.
Yeah, then
so I find that very awkward.
So then you would put the thing down, you put the thing down to say, to demark the event of you paying for your shopping in some way?
I think I've realised whose fault it is. It's the person in front of the man holding his shopping because they didn't put the divider down. That's whose fault it is.
Right.
We definitely need a diagram, don't we?
Yeah, yeah.
Should we just decide on one rule? The rule is whose job is it to put the divider down?
So I think it's your job to put the divider down after you put your shopping down.
Good.
You put the divider down and say, okay, this bit's for you, person behind me.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah,
I think I think that's a fairly well-established rule. But I think the complication here is if the person in front of you is holding their food, which I do think is their prerogative, but it mm-hmm. also creates this very complex situation.
What if there is nobody behind you? Do you have to be on? So you don't put it down because then that's just annoying for the checkout operator. So you just don't have one down. But do you have to be on high alert for someone coming so you immediately do put it down?
If it was nobody else, if it was just me and an empty checkout, I would never put it down. So I think I'm making more work for them.
Yes, yes. But then do you have to be on high alert for someone arriving?
Oh, I'm on
arriving?
High alert. Yeah, if anybody comes anywhere near, it's going
You're
down.
On high alert anyway.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm on high alert. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
But well, I think let's I didn't understand this problem initially, and I don't think we've answered it at all.
Oh, right.
Because this isn't about a divider at the back of your shopping, is it? About a divider at the front of your shopping.
And it's about someone holding their shopping.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Because you're dealing with a maverick. You're dealing with someone who isn't playing by the rules and conventions of society. And what do you do in that situation?
Yeah.
Because his food's got to go down at some point, right?
Unless he's going to pass it to the cashier. They're just going to pass each item over, which is unlikely.
Yeah. Okay, I mean, I think you did the right thing because you were in an unclear situation and you wanted to demark your territory. And draw a line between where his responsibility ended and yours started. But I mean, I think this is one of those black swan events. Does this happen very often, really? I'm not saying that it's not worth addressing and having a rule for just in case.
Yeah.
But I think you did the right thing. So we have what was the name of the person who sent this in?
Charlie.
So we have the Charlie precedent set.
Oh, love it. Okay.
But I think it's unlikely to arise is my feeling. But there we go. Charlie, you have established a behaviour for which the rest of us can follow in the unlikely event of this ever happening again anywhere in the world at any point in history. And that was our podcast. Thank you for listening. If you have a quandary for Quandary Corner, why would you send it in after that little display of incompetence and confusion on our part? Give us a go. Or if you have a story for us, it's hello@adriftpodcast.com. Thanks to Man and the Echo for the backing music and for Emily Harrison for the incidental music. Carla Gowlett took our photos. Kim Rainey designed our artwork. And I'll finish this week by saying, sorry, my zip is stuck and I can't get it out of my coat. Podication time. This comes from Stephanie, who says, hello, Jeff and Annabelle.
Hello.
Hello. I would firstly like to say that I listen to your show weekly. However, also admit that I am certainly not a drifter. I am the daughter of a Greek mother and a pantomime dame father. So being a drifter was never in the stars.
Oh, wow.
I feel that somebody like that only exists in novels. That's great.
Oh, I know.
Love it. I would like to dedicate this podcast to my ex-partner, Alex. We parted on the 16th of January, 3 days before our four-year anniversary. Alex is kind, intelligent, thoughtful, and was the one who introduced me to your podcasters. He himself identifies as a drifter. The parting was neither cruel nor nasty, our relationship was just no longer meant to be. So I would like to take this opportunity to say thank you for the past years. I have no regrets and will never see the time as wasted. I wish you the happiest future. Very kind regards, your Stephanie. That's the most dignified thing I've ever read.
We've never had a podication of the like, have we, ever?
No, that's really quite remarkable.
Mm.
I mean, isn't that the way all relationships should be able to end, and yet none of us are capable of that?
If only,
wow.
Yes.
Wow. I'm very impressed at the two of you.
Unless, like, one of them's, like, covering a lot up, I don't know. I don't mean it. I'm sure you both...
You don't think we're being used here, do you?
There's a lot of spite in her words.
Yeah.
Like, they're covered in sarcasm. No, I think they're probably in the same place, and that's lovely.
Wow, that's really amazing. You're not watching this thing, Couples Therapy, are you?
No.
Have you heard about it?
No.
Oh, it's one of the greatest things that's ever been on. It's on, I think you can find it on iPlayer, but it's an American show. It's on Showtime in the States. And it's exactly that. It's couples across a series. There's maybe four or five couples.
Oh, yes, I've heard of it. Yeah.
And you see them having therapy sessions. Now, if you'd have told me about that, my instant reaction would be, oh, but it's going to be rubbish, because any kind of therapist who would agree to have TV cameras in a session is going to be a bad therapist who's interested in being famous. Mm. And yet they have found somebody who I think is brilliant. She, you know, she is an understated analyst who is to those couples that she sees, intelligent, perceptive. She listens, but she's, you know, inscrutable is the way that you need to be good at that job in a certain way. And it is excellent television.
And wasn't there some kind of, not scandal, but people were led to think it was all entirely real and maybe was slightly scripted? I might have got that wrong. There was something I read on, that's
when?
How I've heard about
Recently?
It. Recently? They're all actors, don't you know? I don't know. Look it up.
I just remember reading something. Oh, this is terrible news.
No. Just look it up yourself. I've no doubt got it entirely wrong.
But what am I supposed to Google there?
Oh, I'll do it for you now.
You're not thinking of something else, are you?
No. That's the only reason I know about this thing.
You're not thinking of EastEnders? This is terrible news.
Couples therapy news. Might have dreamt it. That is the weirdest thing. Nothing. That is weird. I dreamt it. How strange. Okay.
Okay, good.
Sorry.
Good, and please.
Apologies to the makers.
Yeah.
And to you.
Okay.
Mm.
It is fantastic television.
Oh, I'll watch it.
It's really
I feel like
good.
I should now after I slandered it.
And I also think maybe if I was in a certain mood and you told me about this, I'd think, oh, I can't be watching that. I don't want to see other people's relationship issues. But I think you do, is what I've come to on that. And I don't want to say too much, but it's really, really good.
Okay.
Maybe if Stephanie and Alex had spent some time watching it, they wouldn't find themselves in the situation they're in.
Spoiler alert.
No, I mean, I actually think Stephanie and Alex didn't need it, because they, just going off Stephanie's email, right? They just handled this in a very mature way, understood that it was what it was for the time it was supposed to be,
yes,
and moved on in the most civil and respectful way possible.
Mm-hmm.
So there we go. That's the podcation. If you would like one, email us hello@adriftpodcast.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned, We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.